Good morning, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order for today. Today is March 10th, 2022. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Mr. Brinks, can you take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Hi, I'm here.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner. Bonner is present. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Drazkowski is present. Representative Elkins. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne present.
Cleburne is present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason.
Mason.
Kosnick is present.
Mason is present. Kosnick is present. Representative New Brindley. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski present.
Pawlowski is present. Representative Quam.
Present.
Quam is present. Representative Elkins. Representative New Brindley. With that, Chair, we have a quorum.
Quorum is present. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Cleburne, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes be adopted.
Motions made to approve the minutes for March 8th. All in favor, want to unmute and say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The minutes are approved. We have a few bills on our agenda today, and we're going to start with House File 3483, and I'll move House File 3483, Richardson's bill, and we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion. Wait till we see what happens with our fiscal note and all that fun stuff. And Representative Richardson, I see you have an amendment. Do you want to put the amendment on first? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be great. It's the technical amendment, the A2.
And I see it just, the date of the enactment. And I don't know why you wouldn't want it to have it happen in 2032, but members, it just changes the date from 2032 to 2023. It just looks like somebody was a little dyslexic when they wrote it. So all in favor of the A2 amendment to put the bill in the proper order, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Representative Richardson, you want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3483 as amended appropriates $750,000 for a feasibility study to develop a United States Amateur Sports and Training Center in Dakota County. The bill would require the Minnesota Sports Commission to partner with the City of Eagan and Embergrove Heights to accomplish the study and would include requirements such as market research and analysis, economic impacts and sustainability, identification of potential users, activities, potential sites, costs, opportunities for local resources, and impacts on existing or government-sponsored facilities. The bill would also require that the commission submit a report to the legislature on the findings. While we're in the early stages and there are many questions, there's significant interest in the community to proactively explore the feasibility of a complex that would serve youth and adults. And today, I have a few testifiers to speak in support of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. I see we have a few testifiers. Commissioner Atkins, welcome back to the legislature. Long time no see.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. It's nice to see you and so many of my former colleagues, albeit virtually. I miss you all. I don't miss the late nights, and I respect all the work you do. But I don't miss being at the Capitol at 2 a.m. anymore.
Say your name for the record, please.
I certainly will. I'm Joe Atkins. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner. I also serve on the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. And Mr. Chairman, members, staff, for the past two decades, I've heard of the need for an amateur sports facility in the South Metro. First as a member of the Minnesota House, and then as a Dakota County Commissioner, and as a board member of the Amateur Sports Commission. That demand started out as a drumbeat, but has steadily grown louder. When the Minnesota Vikings, after an exhaustive search, selected a site in Eagan on the Inver Grove border for its headquarters and world-class facilities, that loud drumbeat of demand for an amateur sports facility became a full brass band. That's about 2.5 years ago. I assembled a working group of key stakeholders, and here's what we know at this point. Number one, right now Minnesota is near the forefront for amateur sports and sports tourism in the country. The National Sports Center alone attracts 4 million visitors and results in $104 million in economic activity for Minnesota businesses. Simply put, a facility like what is being contemplated with the U.S. Amateur Sports and Training Center could well secure Minnesota's spot as the best state in the nation for amateur sports and sports tourism. Number two, the perfect conditions exist right now to add a South Metro facility for four key reasons: location, demand, operation, and local support. I'll briefly describe each of those for you. First, with respect to location, you simply will not find a better spot anywhere in the country for a facility like this. Near the crossroads of 35B and 494, just 12 minutes from the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, the Mall of America, the state capitol, both downtowns, and potentially within a touchdown pass to the Minnesota Vikings headquarters, the U.S. Amateur Sports and Training Center will be poised to attract not just local, state, and regional competition, but national and international events as well. It also helps to know that there are literally thousands of acres of undeveloped land in this part of the South Metro. When we talk about demand, as confirmed nationwide, demand is off the charts for venues supporting sports like basketball, volleyball, and swimming. We've also heard from representatives of sports like cycling, curling, and wrestling, among others. Remarkably, the demand has proven to be recession, growing steadily and markedly, no matter what's happening in the economy. Worldwide, you simply will not find a better, more knowledgeable, or more inclusive facility operator than the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. They have developed an international reputation at the NSC. Not only do they run a great operation, they make it accessible to kids and families from all walks of life. Finally, on the local support front, I'm going to leave that to the mayors of Eagan and Inver Grove Heights to talk about the level of local support as well as the demand for a facility like this. With all this said, and here's where I'm going to finish, Mr. Chairman, we're not asking you to take our word for how perfect the conditions are for creation of a U.S. Amateur Sports and Training Center in Inver Grove, Eagan. You're just too savvy for that. We know you will want to see the business case, the feasibility analysis, and frankly, so do we. Thus, we're here supporting this bipartisan legislation from Representative Richardson and Senator Duckworth, seeking your support for a study to confirm what I've described and setting the stage for creation of the U.S. Amateur Sports and Training Center, cementing Minnesota's place as a national and global leader in amateur sports and sports tourism. And Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions or concerns the committee may have, but I think you'll probably want to first hear from the mayors of Eagan and Inver Grove Heights. With that, I'll turn it back to you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. And we'll take questions after everybody's testified. The next person on my list is Mike McGuire, mayor of Eagan. Want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Mason. I'm Mike McGuire, and I'm the mayor of the city of Eagan. Thank you for your time this morning and for hearing my testimony in support of House File 3483. Funding to study the feasibility of an amateur sports complex in the South Metro. I'm joined today by our city's Director of Parks and Recreation, Andrew Pimentel, and pleased to join with my mayoral colleague from Inver Grove Heights and with Joe Atkins in support of the legislation. I'd also like to thank Representative Richardson for authoring the bill and Senator Duckworth of Lakeville for authoring the companion bill in the Senate. Even at this early stage of concept and vision, the diverse collection of individuals who have encouraged this feasibility study speaks to the regional value of the project and the regional value it could have to the South Metro and to the state of Minnesota in terms of economic impact and as a complement to our statewide amateur sports environment. While I will talk about Eagan, I want to assure you that I am not here to advocate for my city, but instead for our region of the state and the youth and adult amateur athletes in the South Metro. Eagan is the second largest city in Dakota County at just under 70,000 residents and over 2,300 businesses. Part of our success as a city has been to continually plan for and anticipate our community's needs for the future. Almost a decade ago, we developed a comprehensive parks master plan, and more recently, a comprehensive facility study, where we engaged our community broadly to identify future and emerging park programming and facility needs. We found that our community has an increasingly broad demand for more diverse local and youth athletic programming and facilities. Specifically, we found that compared to national standards, we have a shortage of indoor court space and can't keep up with the spaces needed for sports like basketball, volleyball, and other emerging court sports. Many Minnesota communities are familiar with these challenges in the constant pursuit of ice time. And in this regard, Eagan is no different than your communities and others in our region. The cost of such facilities for individual communities can be prohibitive and fiscally inefficient. However, when communities partner and collaborate, they can not only serve the collective local and regional needs, but also become a statewide and national draw for training and tournament events that help to fund the operation needs of such a complex. In addition, studies show that these centers and spaces can be a catalyst for regional businesses and the hospitality industry. Eagan and the South Metro region are increasingly becoming destination communities. And with proximity to MSEB Airport, the Mall of America, quick access to hundreds of hotel rooms, and the Vikings Lakes development surrounding the Minnesota Vikings practice facility, I believe much of the infrastructure needed to support a successful amateur sports facility is in place. The feasibility study in this legislation will keep us in the region, but will help us in the region who sense a need and an opportunity to work with the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission to more deeply evaluate regional needs that are currently underserved, identify public and private community partners and clients, and develop a financially responsible operations plan. Chair Nelson, committee members, again, I thank you for your time and consideration. Andrew and I are happy to respond to any questions that you may have after the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. McGuire. The next person I have on my list is Tom Bartholomew, the mayor of Inver Grove Heights.
Good morning, everyone. Tom Bartholomew, Inver Grove Heights mayor. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with your organization, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm not going to reiterate or repeat everything that's been said. I think we all agree in this area that the location is great. The demand is there. We know the shortage in facility time and the operations of it this operation would help tremendously with our deficiency and some of the capacity issues we have. But I will speak to and reiterate the regional effect. This will help all of this area, north, south, and east and west of us. We are in an opportune location, as said and stated, closest to the airport, closest to access freeway and the facilities that are already in both cities of Eagan and Inver Grove Heights. We have a long-standing working relationship with the mayor of Eagan and in the city of Eagan. We work well together, and we look forward to a mutual understanding and growth of this amateur facility. And this study will go a long way to answer the questions that we have, where it goes, who pays for it, and all of the other mechanics. And I can assure you that our council, the city of Inver Grove Heights Council, is very much behind this. They support this and look forward to the study, and I respectfully request that you would consider approving the funding for the study. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for having me this morning. Thank you to Representative Richardson and the Senator Duckworth. I appreciate everything. Thank you much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The next person I have on my list is Wayne Harris, Chairman of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Wayne Ferris. I'm a past chairman of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. I was the original chairman back when it was first created, and I served two terms, one under a Democratic governor and one under a Republican governor. Managed to get along with both of them. I oversaw the building of the facilities on a firsthand basis up in Blaine and in partnership with 12 other different entities around the state of Minnesota. We built other facilities in other communities all the way from the Iron Range to Rochester to Marshall. After I left the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, I went to work for the U.S. Olympic Committee as a manager of athlete development. And in that capacity, I partnered with the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission on athlete development programs up in Blaine and at other facilities. I'm very much in favor of this project. I don't know a lot of the details, but I think it's a very good thing. And I think on two fronts, one on the social benefits and, you know, the benefits of athletic opportunities are huge, and they're beyond question. Sorry about that. They're well known and well accepted. In terms of economic impact, I'm familiar with the economic impact of the Blaine facility. I think that there's huge potential out there, as Commissioner Atkins said. There are a number of organizations that keep track of things called emerging sports. One notable one is the NCAA. Because of Title IX, the NCAA is always looking for opportunities to create more sports for women so that they can even up the scholarship issues, which continue to plague them really because of football. They have lists of emerging sports, like currently they have aerobics and tumbling, rugby, triathlon, women's wrestling, and other things that they have identified a solid base of participants, a solid base of interest, and rapidly growing participation. So there are huge opportunities out there for economic impact in terms of creating training programs, creating tournaments, and things like that. It's not going to become the Blaine facility overnight, but in time, it can be an extremely I don't want to say profitable, but it can create huge economic impact. Other than that, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Ferris. And I should read my agenda properly, and I left out the first part. But thank you for your testimony. The next person we have on our list, and then we'll get to questions, is Mr. Jason Lardy of Minnesota Cycling Center.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jason Lardy. I'm the president of the Minnesota Cycling Center. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to returning the sport of velodrome racing and training to Minnesota. I've had the pleasure of speaking to this committee in the past in support of legislation to help us regain our status as one of the elite velodrome hosts in the U.S. And I'm also happy to be a constituent of Representative Greenman. So hello, Representative Greenman. Nice to be with you today. Thanks for the opportunity to be with you. Minnesota has a long history, over a century of velodrome bicycle racing in the world stage. We hosted the first U.S. Race in 1896. And for 30 years, we hosted the world's best class of racers in Blaine at the National Sports Center Velodrome. We also developed two Olympic medalists and hundreds of national elite and junior and masters national champions. So we've got a long history of solid amateur sports here, in particular with bicycle racing. But not only does the Minnesota Cycling Center have a goal of developing great racers, we also have developed STEM curriculum that's bicycle-centric, and we're providing that curriculum now with the Minneapolis Public Schools. And so Minneapolis Public Schools have given us a great opportunity to develop that curriculum, but also it's given us an understanding that we can provide multiple forms of education and opportunities for youth through the Minnesota Cycling Center. And we believe that the U.S. Amateur Sports and Training Center would be a perfect venue to host velodrome racing. Minnesota's got some of the largest participation numbers in the country in high school mountain bike racing. We've got some of the highest trails per capita, bike trails per capita in the country as well. And so bicycling is obviously a very important part of amateur sports and athletic activity here in the state. And so we rise in support of the resolution here at House File 3483. And thank you for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Lardy. I see we have some questions. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll have a couple different questions for testifiers and the author. I guess to the author, can you tell me why there isn't a there's a funding mechanism that you're asking for $750,000 for this? Have the local governments not explored a joint powers resolution where they could put funds together from their park and economic development funds to pursue this rather than have the legislature pay for this?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash, for the question. The group that has been working together has come together to try to do this feasibility study, and as part of that feasibility study, also wants to look at the opportunity for local resources to be part of any future findings that might come from this initial study. This is really trying to take the first step to really look at that feasibility, and as part of that, we will also be looking at what local resources might be available. And if the chair would allow, I would be happy to also allow any of the testifiers to share some of the more behind-the-scenes conversations that have been happening as well.
And does any one of the testifiers want to step up and help answer that question? Mr. Mayor McGuire.
Thank you, Sharon Nelson. I appreciate that. As I suggested in my testimony, Mayor Bartholomew and I are here really not as representatives of our cities and advocates of our cities, but of the region. And we're very early in this process, conceptually. Quite frankly, neither Mayor Bartholomew or I have ever done this before. So going about and taking on the feasibility study is something that we really have very little experience with. And so that's why we've requested the funding come from the state for the work with the Amateur Sports Commission. From a regional perspective, at this point, we have not talked about what a local match might be because we're not sure how large the scope of the project would be to take on. And at this point, are unable to commit to that research. Certainly, we anticipate that if the feasibility study suggests a viable and potentially successful sports complex here. We'd anticipate that we'd probably be back looking for bonding money for that, but the cast of characters on the local government level may look different. It might not be just the city of Eagan and Invergrove Heights, but all of Dakota County and communities therein. So I think in order to work all those issues out, we need to go forward and get a sense of what kind of partnership is required to bring this across the finish line. And that's a way down the road potential. So we're really kind of the tip of the spear regionally and trying to maintain that regional value and that regional approach.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess to concentrate my comment there is the state is now going to pay for a regional benefiting study that they, according to the testifier, they don't know the actual cost of. So this seems like a large stub number that we're going to throw out there to do this study. Having served in local government myself, I understand that certainly there's got to be local skin in the game in every aspect of this. When we were making park improvements or regional improvements that would benefit others, we certainly talked to them regarding joint powers agreements to make investments. And we didn't run to the state coffers to pay for that. So I guess my second question is to the author or testifiers, have you spoken to the city of Blaine? Have you spoken to people in that facility? Because I'll give you some insight. If you've been on this committee for very long, you've heard the sports center in Blaine come before us asking for funding to help with their staffing needs because it is a regionally important facility, and I myself have spent countless hours there. I've had a number of children play soccer there at tournaments that draw people in from not just regional areas, but from around the globe. My son, who played, who was an NCAA collegiate athlete, played against teams from Norway, Mexico, Sweden, Finland. I think we played against a team from, I think, Saudi Arabia. So we have seen at this regional facility in Blaine lots of people from around the world. And my fear is that this new facility that you're dreaming of is going to be a competitor to that and will diminish the draw because your facility may have that new facility smell and you may like it better or someone else may like it better. But the people of Blaine have made sizable investments. The state has made sizable investments. So I'm wondering what level of communication has happened with the people in Blaine?
Commissioner Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Nash, thank you for the question. I actually had that in my comments, and I forgot to mention it. The point of this is not to supplant the National Sports Center in Blaine, but to supplement it. And that's part of the reason driving the study, is we don't want to, I'm on the Amateur Sports Commission. The last thing we want to do is cannibalize what's going on in Blaine. And in fact, most of the discussion, the demand seems to be revolving around things like basketball, volleyball, swimming, which there is no comparison or comparative facility in Blaine. But thank you so much for asking the question, because I blew by it in my comments, and I really appreciate you letting me make that point.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. I mean, Commissioner Atkins, it's good to have you back here. I have spoken to people in Blaine, and they are telling me that they are diametrically opposed to this, and they feel that this would create an economic disadvantage for their facilities, that they do have some concerns. And I, as a result of that, feel that this is not the project I think that the state should be funding. This is something that a regional group of governments, either counties through their economic development organizations or cities, you can create joint powers. But I don't understand why we come to the legislature to create something that, in the view of the sports center in Blaine, is going to be a competitor. So I think that this is probably not the best use of $750,000 that could be put out there. And while I certainly understand that if it were built, the region that it's going to service could be seeing economic development. And as a result of that, I think that the region should be the one making the economic development. I am not in favor of this bill, and I will be voting no.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Mason, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, my question had to do with what we've been discussing. And I'm assuming that the study would show this, whether the new facility would be competing with the facility in Blaine, because obviously that facility comes to the state for money on many occasions. So, but I have to believe, knowing the amount of athletic activity that I see within our communities, that certainly we should be able to get this. The survey would, or your study would be able to take care of that. And I have to say, I mean, there was a time when Commissioner Atkins and I were both on our local city's city council. So, I mean, the history here is really something. Whoever would like to address that, but I think we've already started dealing with that particular focus point that I was thinking of.
I see Mr. McGuire has his hand up. Mayor McGuire.
Chair Nelson, Representative Mason, I appreciate the question and the comment. I wanted to add, tack on to Joe's comments earlier in response to Representative Nash. One thing I want to add is that we have, in fact, as a group, visited with the Blaine Center and with the Minnesota Sports Athletic Commission to understand how that operation works and what their business model is, for lack of better terms. I think to the extent that the legislation commissions our region to work with the Minnesota Amateur Sports Athletic Commission on the feasibility study, a part of that certainly would be to understand what their market is in terms of business model and what opportunities there are to serve an expanded market, either through different sports or in a complementary fashion with Blaine. And to the extent that the Amateur Sports Commission is going to be the one working in concert with us, I would assume that in the conduct of the survey, one of the things they're going to be looking for is that lack of competition, but the opportunity for collaboration and supplementation. So,
Representative Mason, follow up?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, so this is a study to get kind of ideas on the table or anything. A couple questions. What preliminary work has been done? It sounds like it's been some discussion, kind of an idea. Has there been any preliminary studies by Eagan or Invergrove Heights or even Dakota County in advance of asking for $750,000 to do another study? Is there preliminary work been done to justify the advancement of this, even at the very first half step here?
Representative Ruth Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kosnick, for the question. As Commissioner Atkins lifted up in the beginning, there's been a lot of conversation, and the conversations have really intensified in the last year and have grown with the new Vikings training facility as well. We're in the early stages, and as has been laid out, the process around this is to really do the work of getting the feasibility analysis. Right now, there are a lot of questions that still need to be answered, even in terms of looking at the scope of what that regional impact would be. So I would say, yes, there's been a lot of discussion, but there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. And we really want to be able to follow the data on this. And so to be able to pull that together, get the feasibility study, and to make an informed decision.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Who would be doing the study? Who would be doing the study, please?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So within the feasibility study, we would be working together with the City of Eagan, Invergrove Heights, and also the Minnesota Sports Commission to determine what that process would look like. What the bill really lays out is the requirements that would be required to be a part of that analysis, which is lengthy. And then that there would be a requirement that that report then come back to the legislature for consideration.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, what I'm, going to have a lot of conversations and a lot of ideas and dream big, and generally that's a really good thing. My concern is the local partners mentioned here haven't put any skin in the game, but I get the sense because there's a overtaxation of the people's dollars, people are running to the legislature to study this, study that, fund this, fund that. Without them having any skin in the game. And so I guess I would like to see a more preliminary, unbiased data. And as you mentioned, follow the science. What we're doing is following some dreams here. And so there should be some local initiative first before you come to the legislature to ask for this, because I would ask you, but I out of time constraints here, I would ask you what the next steps are. The next steps are you're going to have kind of, you said Eagan and Invergrove Heights or whoever locally is basically going to take $750,000, create a fancy plan. And I'm not sure that I trust the science that would be put into that or the actual research, because it doesn't seem like it's some kind of nonpartisan type research. And then you're going to come to the legislature and say, hey, now we need $40 million to build this, to buy it, to bond it. And so it starts down the way we've seen so many other projects in the legislature. And as was mentioned earlier, I think there are concerns of viability for facilities like this. You know, if the National Sports Center was coming to us, handing us money because they're making so much money, but it's actually the opposite, then I think that's something we could talk about. You mentioned the Vikings facility. I'm going to ask rhetorically. That's a nice facility, but I don't think they're interested in becoming a state-owned property. And if they want to partner with that, certainly they're not short for money to help you do some preliminary work before you come to the legislature and ask for a study that's just going to be the first step into more and more state investments. I think this seems to me kind of like a foregone conclusion with all respect to Commissioner Atkins. This is in Dakota County, so I appreciate your efforts and ideas, and same to the mayors, but still you got to be data driven, and this seems like you're going to put your own data together to say, yes, we need this in your particular cities. I might argue that there's other area in Dakota County that's might be more beneficial, but I'm guessing your study will not have that same vantage point. And similarly, the questions about the biking and velodrome, I think there was a facility already in the one of the northern suburbs of Roseville, and that had to close. So I really question the state investment in this. If people want to do it privately in the free market, that's a different whole different thing. So I won't be supporting this. I think it's just needs more work to be done before the legislature hands over $750,000. And I get it, there's an election coming up. Maybe that's a factor in here for people to bring something home or something, but that's not appropriate use of state dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick, next person on my list before I go to them, the velodrome that was part of the Blaine Sports Complex, and the velodrome was closed down because it's an outdoor facility. It was well past its useful life, and the cost of needed repairs for it were well beyond what cost of a building originally was, and that's why it was closed down. And I know those people have been looking for building a new facility, and but that's enclosed so that the weather, because that was an outdoor facility, so the weather won't take care of it. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Richardson, I know Representative Nash sort of alluded to this, but we didn't get details. I'm wondering if you can tell us what the state's obligation is for the Blaine facility and what you would anticipate the state's obligation being for this facility moving forward, depending on what the study showed.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative New Brindley, for the question. So the scope of the bill that is before us is a feasibility study to determine the market research, the analysis, to be able to identify potential uses, to determine if there's if there is an actual audience in order to pull forward something that can be sustainable. This is really just the first step in the process, and it is taking into account the fact that there are existing facilities that are there, and also looking at ensuring that there would be opportunity for local resources. As the testifiers have laid forward, the regional opportunity that is available here extends beyond Invergrove Heights and in Eagan within Dakota County, and this study would be an opportunity to really get to answering a number of questions. And so what we would be agreeing to with this bill is the first step of having a feasibility study.
Representative New Brindley. And we're gonna lay this bill over, so members, it's gonna be here for now for Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And certainly I understand regional significance. I mean, certainly athletes in my area, in my constituency, use the Blaine facility, and theoretically they would use a facility down in Dakota County as well. Do you know what the state's obligation is for the Blaine facility right now?
Mr. Commissioner Atkins, would, as a commissioner or a member of the Sports Facility Commission, maybe you can answer that question.
In terms of the competition for the Blaine facility, obviously there's smaller local venues that are already existing. And on a national and international basis, there are some that are significant. But in my honest opinion, there's nothing that compares to Blaine, particularly on the soccer front.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I was looking for, the state's obligation as far as the state's investment, and it particularly ongoing costs to the state for these facilities.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding is that aside from the capital side and debt service, that the Amateur Sports Commission, National Sports Center, does such a good job operationally, and it's similar across the country, that they can make ends meet operationally. It's if you go into it with a huge amount of debt service that you get underwater.
Representative Brindley, and I know the Blaine National Sports Center was in front of us, I think it was last year, due to the pandemic, then not having some of their things that they were a little bit underwater, but they normally they take care of themselves. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope, as Representative Kosnick indicated, we always are concerned about the inputs into any study, because you can get the outputs you want based on the inputs that go in. And so I'd be a little concerned in ensuring that we weren't creating a situation where other facilities are not able to make the ends meet with a significant level of competition. This clearly would be, clearly the vision for this facility would be much more significant than maybe a normal regional facility. Blaine is certainly more than that as well. And I'd be a little concerned about what that would do for the operations there as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Claiborne, quickly.
Just be very quick. I just want to thank Representative Richardson for being thoughtful and making sure that this is a state-sponsored study. As I represent a community that depends a great deal on our sports revenue, I really appreciate the fact that you'll be looking broadly to see how this will impact other communities and their revenue streams. And I think, as I was just listening to Representative New, I appreciate the fact that she was talking about, inputs can affect the outcomes of a study. And I'm really thankful that this has a legislative report that's coming back, so that those of us who have other communities who are interested in sports tourism, we can see and be certain that this is not going to hurt our communities as well. So as you look at that, I would like for you to think about the smaller communities that also do national sports tournaments, and Plymouth being one of those. The other piece I would like for you to take into consideration, since I was the vice chair of redistricting, I was looking at the diversity of our communities and the different sports that might be interested, the different communities that might be interested in different types of sports, and making sure that if we're contemplating another sports facility for our state and our larger regions, that we take in the consideration the different sports that that communities, diverse communities, would find appealing, and for that larger draw, especially in the southern regions of our state. So thank you again. You're always thoughtful in your legislation, and you always come prepared, and I greatly appreciate that. Thank you, Representative Richardson.
And Representative Nash, you got the last question, and then we'll lay this over. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to make sure that I heard this correctly, that the study is going to be undertaken by the communities that we just heard from saying how much they wanted to do this project. I didn't hear that it would be undertaken by an objective third-party organization. But I heard from the author, and I believe one of the other testifiers, that they themselves, the communities that will be benefiting from this, that are here before us right now telling us that they want to do this, that they would be the ones conducting the study. So I question whether there's objectivity. But if the author would perhaps correct me on that or confirm that that is exactly what's going to be happening, because that seems to be a little bit of a conflict of interest, that folks would stand around saying, well, gosh, we sure want this, so let's write a report that says, yeah, we need this. So if the author would let us know that.
And Mr. Chair, or Representative Nash, 1.9 of the bill is the Minnesota Sports Amateur Sports Commission that's going to be doing the study. Representative Richardson, if you want to expound on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As stated in my opening comments, the bill would require the Minnesota Sports Amateur Commission to undertake the study, and they would be able to partner with those in the region, including Eagan and Invergrove Heights. But the commission is known for its rigorous work in developing studies.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm glad this is being laid over. I think this is this has no local investment. And if the people are here professing their undying love for this project, there has been not $1 proposed. So I think that there's some real problems with this. I'm glad we're laying it over. I hope it does not make it out of the committee. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, I'll lay this bill over, and thank you, Representative Richardson and testifiers, for your time. The next bill we have on our agenda, hopefully will go a little bit quicker, it's House File 3545, Representative Wozelik. I'll move House File 3545 be referred to the General Register. Representative Wozelik, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 3545 is a relatively simple bill. It adds language to the statute about the Breeders' Fund to authorize that certain fee deposits in that fund can be used to support the adoption, retirement, and repurposing of racehorses. This will help ensure that those retired racehorses are taken care of after their racing careers are over. That's brief description of the bill. Like I said, it's pretty simple, and I do have a testifier here to talk a little bit more about the bill and the need for the bill and to help answer member questions if there are any.
And I have Mr. Steve May on my list. Mr. May, please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Steve, S-T-E-V-E, May, M-A-Y. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Racing Commission.
And your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I can assure you this will go much faster, but I want to begin by thanking you and the members of the committee for this. On behalf of the Minnesota Racing Commission, I just thank you for this opportunity to testify on House File 3545. Also, I want to thank Representative Wozelik for her work that she's done on this, as well as the work that Senator Duckworth's done on the companion bill in the Senate. The horse racing industry in Minnesota is really a nationwide leader when it comes to our equine athletes. And giving them an opportunity to lead full and productive lives after their racing careers are over. The racetracks in Minnesota, the horse people that own and train and care for these horses, and the breeding industry all work very hard and sacrifice a great deal to provide funding for these racehorse aftercare programs. In addition, all the fines that are levied by the Minnesota Racing Commission officials, racing officials on racing participants, all go towards funding grant programs to help these aftercare programs pursuant to Minnesota statute. Still, with all of this effort that we have, there's always a need to search for additional funds for these aftercare programs, and that's what we're doing today. Now, going back to 2016, the legislature approved advanced deposit wagering, which allows patrons to place wagers over their phones or computers. A small portion of the gross wagering from these account wagering operations was dedicated to regulate racing operations in Minnesota, as well as to the administration of the Breeders' Fund. The Breeders' Fund, for those who don't know, is a program that's there to incentivize people to breed their racehorses in Minnesota due to that positive agribusiness economic impact that it has, that Minnesota realizes from keeping those horses and breeding those here. When ADW wagering, as we call it, was legalized, it was really difficult to estimate the true impact it was going to have on online wagering operations in Minnesota. And there were some statutory limitations on the Breeders' Fund administration fee that was collected. Those really were limited to two things. It was the administration of the funds that allows the commission to recoup a portion of our costs related to the administration of the funds, such as salary needs and supplies and things like that. And the second was to allow the commission to advertise and promote the breeding industry in Minnesota. And the commission has been a good steward of these funds all along. But due to those limitations, plus this huge uptick that we've seen in online wagering, mostly as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, the special revenue fund now has a balance of about $490,000, as of March 1st of this year. So the legislation that's before you today would allow the commission to expand the use of those funds to not only administer and promote the breeding, but also to use these for these racehorse aftercare and adoption programs. The commission currently awards these grants that are dedicated to the retirement, adoption, repurposing to a couple of different programs. These give these horses a chance to be retrained to go into different careers, such as therapy horses or police horses, other event horses, just a whole bunch of different alternatives other than slaughter, which was a older method and an unfortunate method. These funds go directly to care for the horses. Because these operations are operated on a completely volunteer basis. So this is really there to use for the feed of horses, veterinary care, facility needs, because they're all operated as not-for-profits. The legislation that's there today still maintains the overall goal of promoting the horse breeding industry in the state, because it's really important to a lot of the purchasers of these horses that they know that there's some long-term care options for those horses. The bill before you today does not, as all commission operations, does not receive anything from the Minnesota General Fund, and it does not increase any kind of regulatory fees or taxes on the industry. These are just existing funds that are still accumulating, and it goes to a very good use for the breeding industry in Minnesota. The commission is fully in support of this legislation, and on behalf of the commission, I ask the committee to advance this legislation. Be happy to address any kind of questions or concerns you have with this, but thank you, sir.
And I see one hand up, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, how many horses do we have in Minnesota? Does anybody know that?
Mr. May.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. There was an economic impact study that we had several years ago that's a little bit dated now. We plan to do that again probably this summer. But as far as the aftercare, these aftercare programs take in about 100 horses a year right now is an average number of that.
Representative Druskowski.
Okay, I got part of the answer, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if the testifier could help with just a next question. 100 horses a year, these are select horses apparently in this legislation that we're going to use tax money to find some disposition for them. How many horses are in Minnesota total?
Mr. May.
Mr. Chair, I don't have an answer to that. I could probably follow up on that at a different time, but I don't have, and especially, you know, I would only really have access to the race horses in Minnesota. I wouldn't have numbers for other breeds of horses. It's just the thoroughbreds, quarter horses, and standardbreds in Minnesota that I would possibly have access to.
And Mr. May, these are not tax dollars. These are dollars that come out of the breeders and those and the racehorses, and those owners pay into the fund.
Mr. Chair, it's slightly different. This is tax. This is regulatory fees that are collected from gross wagering operations from players that are betting over their phones and computers. This really has nothing. If there's okay. $1 million in wagers placed and every one of those is a losing wager, this is still money that these advanced deposit account wagering operations are operating in Minnesota. They're not really based in Minnesota. I don't know of any of them that are based in Minnesota at this point. They really don't have any brick and mortar investment in the state. They're just processing these wagers, and this is one in 1.25% of the total gross amount that's wagered goes to this. 1% goes to our regulatory fees, and 0.25% goes to this. So it's nothing directly from the breeders or anybody in Minnesota other than the gross wagering on those players.
I see, but it's not taxpayer. It's not normal taxpayer dollars.
That is correct.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just could remind you that our definition in statute is a fee is a tax. It's a tax. I'm curious. Thank you, Mr. May. Mr. May, who owns the horses, the 100 horses? Who are they owned by?
Mr. May.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the question. When these horses enter these programs, these are surrendered to these these not-for-profit organizations. We have one major one in Minnesota that has several different locations around the state. One of those is in the bigger part of that is in Hastings area, and one of those is in Representative Wasilik's district in the White Bear Lake region. But those are surrendered over to them, and then they are there to either provide permanent housing for them, or ideally they would find some sort of way to adopt those horses out to, again, have a different career, to be companion animals, however they want to do, whatever they can find for that. They all have various needs on that. Some of them are still very, very able to go compete in other disciplines. Some of them, become work animals, a lot of different ways on that.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm confused. So when the horses are racing, Mr. May, who owns them while they're racing?
Mr. May.
There are licensed owners that own those horses while they're competing in Minnesota. So those are, and when those horses are retired and surrendered over to these operations, there is generally a voluntary amount that goes to help the care and feed and veterinary care and dental care and everything for those horses. This is really for a long-term solution on those, but there is an owner of those. Those were licensed by the Racing Commission, and then those owners are turning those horses over.
Representative Drazkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. May. I'm really confused by this bill. We have 100 horses in Minnesota that we're going to take tax money to apparently take care of them and fix their teeth until they die. We have ostensibly thousands, hundreds of thousands, I don't know, maybe more horses in Minnesota, and we are going to take tax money and follow these horses that have been described as athletes and other things, other human attributes have been given to them. I struggle with this bill and the notion that we're going to take tax money, focus on a small subgroup of animals, supposedly for a public purpose, which I don't really understand. These are owned by the owners. Why aren't they taking care of their own horses? They dump them off to some nonprofit, and now we're going to take tax money to pay for them on the way out. Mr. Chair, this is a bad bill. This is a bad idea. This is not what the people's money is for. We should have legislation instead that suggests that these owners of these horses take care of them themselves and be held accountable to take care of their own horses. This is horrible. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as if the author testifier could clarify, does this bill increase the tax rate that's currently established?
Mr. May.
No, it does not. This would only allow us to use the existing funds that, again, have accumulated. We really don't. We've kind of maximized our use of these at this point. We paid for a portion of our administrative costs. That's our salaries, supplies, anything like that that has to do with the administration of that cost, actual commission cost. And we are doing really what we feel is an adequate job, a really pretty good job of doing the breeding and promoting, the promoting and advertising of the industry right now. But otherwise, okay, it does not constitute any additional tax.
Thanks. Okay. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you could clarify, maybe I missed it in your earlier comments. So what is the economic impact of horse racing in the state of Minnesota? I know it's I live a little bit closer to Canterbury, but it's not in my district. Or there's another horse track. What's the economic impact that racing has in the state?
Mr. May.
Roughly.
It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars, I believe. Again, there was an economic impact study that we did back in 2016, I believe. So it's a little bit dated on that. And we do have plans to try to revamp that again using the University of I believe Mankato is the one that did that. But I believe it was several hundred million, I believe, is the number. But I may be off. I could get you a response on that following the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a pretty significant amount, and I guess I would be curious. And I lost my train of thought that I had a third question. It seems like so we're not increasing the tax rate, this big economic driver to the state and economic impact. You know, we had a different bill that actually took care of Fluffy and Muffy, but that was at a cost of quite a bit of money to the general fund. So this is more of a, you know, I would even see it as a, something from the Job and Economic Development Committee to help stimulate, and you're increasing the economic input into our state. So I will be supporting this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Kosick. Seeing no further questions, Representative Wozlik, you want to do a short wrap-up, and we'll get to a vote.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. May, for being here to answer some questions and go more into why this is important legislation. Thank you, members, for the discussion, and just want to reiterate that this is sort of a piece of what we can do to help these animals that have sort of completed their racing careers, and we know that they can live a lot more years after their racing careers are over, and want to ensure that we have the funds necessary to take care of them. So thank you very much. Hope you can support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Wozlik. And Mr. Brinks, if you want to take the roll.
Thank you.
Oh, wait a second. I'll renew my motion that House File 3545 be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Joskowski.
No.
Joskowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski votes aye.
Pulowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Representative Nash.
Sorry, I was getting coffee. No.
Nash votes nay. Chair, with a vote of 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Wozlik. The next bill on our agenda is House File 2005. Representative Long, I'll move the bill to have it in front of us. We're going to lay this over. Members, Mr. Representative Long, if you want to explain your bill. And I see you have a couple of testifiers.
I do. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. So House File 2005 is about simple fairness for public sector unions and making case for employees about the benefits of union membership. The Janus decision by the United States Supreme Court in 2018 upended long-held understandings of how labor law worked in the United States. As a result, it's necessary to update Minnesota's laws to clarify what rights public sector unions have and to protect public employees against being targeted based on their data. Unions are democratically elected, certified collective bargaining representatives. They are charged with representing all employees and therefore have unique and legitimate needs for employee information that the general public does not. This bill provides union representatives a fair shot to make their pitch for union membership to public employees. This includes the right to meet with employees as part of new employee orientations, the right to use meeting space during breaks, the right to contact employees electronically, and have regular access to new hire employee data. The bill also authorizes employees to elect to deduct union dues from their salaries if they choose, and requires public employers to honor union certified lists of deduction authorizations. It would also protect employee data. Often public sector employees are being targeted and even harassed by organizations whose only goal is to undermine the democratically elected union. This can include visits to their home, mailers, and emails, and workers are entitled to privacy from such harassment. So in sum, this protects public employers and labor unions this bill also protects public employers and labor unions from liability for being sued based on prior interpretations of case law around fair share fees. So these steps in the bill would restore some balance in the ability of union representatives to contact new hires and to protect union members against being targeted by third parties. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers on the bill.
I have two testifiers on my list. Mr. Elliott from SEIU. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Long. Members of the committee, my name is Brian Elliott. I'm the Executive Director of the Service Employees International Union, Minnesota State Council. I know that's a mouthful. SEIU represents approximately 65,000 workers statewide who provide care and support for Minnesota families in our homes, hospitals, public schools, nursing homes, hospitals, hotels, universities, and the Twin Cities' largest public and private buildings, as well as those who make and distribute products used by Minnesotans every day. Their home care workers, LPNs and CNAs, their custodians, school bus drivers, dietary staff, paraprofessionals, security officers, and many, many more who we now know as essential workers. These essential workers represent have continued to work on the front lines throughout this pandemic, and roughly 60% of them are covered by the state's Public Employee Labor Relations Act, or PELRA. House File 2005 modernizes PELRA and adds important clarifications to the rights and responsibilities of public employers, employees, and their unions, with some of those clarifications needed following the 2018 U.S. Supreme Court decision in Janus, which overturned their own previous position from 40 years earlier in Abood. This bill finally recognizes that we are well into the age of electronic data and electronic communication and address the related need to protect the personal information of workers maintained by public employers. They add clarity to the existing right, not obligation, but the right of public employees to contribute to their union out of the wages that they've earned through their own labor, as well as the responsibilities of both the public employers and the union with regard to those contributions, including the sole liability of the union for any errors, while also clarifying that public employers and public sector unions had the right to operate in good faith reliance on the decades of state law and U.S. Supreme Court precedent prior to the decision in Janus. Finally, in combination with those important provisions, these bills ensure public sector unions can fulfill their responsibility to work on behalf of all the members of the bargaining unit by providing for the two-way communication between public employees and their union on workplace issues in the ways that actually just make the most sense. As Minnesotans, we're proud of our state and the standard of living we strive to provide for all of our residents, but right now our laws aren't keeping up with the times to ensure that our public servants have all the support they need to keep Minnesota safe and healthy. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today about how we can make these important changes and to support these essential workers who've done so much for all of us. And when the time comes, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. The next person I have on my list is Mr. Edward Reynoso. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Edward Reynoso. I'm the legislative director for Teamsters Local 320. I'd like to thank Representative Long for introducing House File 2005. This is a bill that's long overdue. I'm going to be very brief and just, you know, mention a few things that we believe make PELRA better. First of all, this provides better access to work sites for unions, better access to new hires, and updates the process, as what was mentioned, that allow better dissemination of information via email for our members, provides the use of bargaining unit meetings at workplaces, which, better for our members, allows access, better access to workers so that they can organize and have a voice on the job. So with that, Mr. Chair, I thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and I stand for any questions.
Members, are there any questions? Again, we're laying this bill over. Seeing no questions, no hands popping up. Representative Long, you want to wrap up your bill? And
happy to, Mr. Chair. I think this is a common sense bill that will help make sure we're updating our PELRA law to reflect current precedent and current practices. And I want to thank the two testifiers for their support, and hopefully we can earn member support down the road. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Long. And with that, members, we're going to lay this bill over. Next bill we have on our agenda is House File 3176, Representative Freiberg. And I will move the division report from the Local Government Committee. If everybody wants to unmute, all in favor of the division report, please say aye. 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 Opposed? Ayes have it. I will move House File 3176 to be referred to the General Register. And I see we have an amendment, and Representative Freiberg, do you want to explain the amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment is technical. It makes the existing statutory language consistent with the new language. Specifically, it says that if a city goes below its double A rating, it can't invest additional funds in the private market.
Members, I will move the A2 amendment to have the to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Again, everybody want to unmute, and all in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's in the form you want, Representative Freiberg. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in 2017, the legislature passed a law giving certain cities the ability to invest up to 15% of certain reserves in the private market. Prior to that, their only option was government securities, which have a much lower rate of return. The law we passed is available only to cities with a AAA bond rating or cities with a population of 100,000 or more, regardless of that city's bond rating. You know, the law has been in effect for a couple of years, and there haven't been any problems with that I'm aware of with cities investing recklessly or anything like that. So this bill would lower the rating threshold to AA, which is still very good, and suggests that the city is investing prudently. The bill was requested by the city of Robbinsdale, which is on strong financial footing, but is not able to invest its funds in a way that maximizes the benefit for the taxpayers of the city. In drafting the bill, we consulted with the League of Minnesota Cities and some of the bond experts that they work with. We made changes to address the issues they raised. And I know in your packets, there's a support letter for this bill from the Minnesota Intercounty Association. With me to testify is Mayor Bill Blonigan of Robbinsdale.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Blonigan. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Blonigan. I'm the mayor of Robbinsdale, Minnesota. I've been on the city council for 41 years now, and it's always bothered me that we can't get more market rate returns on our investments, and especially because we're not a 100,000 population city or a AAA bond rating city. We've done a great job getting our bond rating up to AA+. It's almost impossible for a city such as ours, that's a small city of 15,000, to get a AAA bond rating. AA, which is what this bill asks for, is an excellent bond rating. Our AA+ is even better than that. Some very great cities have AA bond ratings. I've checked with Golden Valley. Their bond rating is AA, and they have great management and great fiscal stability. So do we. So if we had been able to invest, as this bill allows, 15% and only 15% of certain of our reserves in more market rate things, we would have been able to garner $300,000 to $330,000 more last year in interest on the millions that we have of taxpayer money sitting in 1.1% on average government bonds. So this is a thing where cities all told altogether can probably get over the years tens of millions of extra dollars. The loser will be, I suppose, the federal government that won't have as many 1.1% interest investors, but we will get taxpayers to get more money at no cost to the state. I realize there's investment risks. There are provisions in the statute as it exists that tell cities that, hey guys, you've got to take this seriously, and you've got to understand that there's a loss possibility. I look at a article from the Star Tribune of January 25th, 2002, that talks about Mansco Perry retiring. He's the leader of the Minnesota State Board of Investment. That's what we would use. We would use the Minnesota State Board of Investment, and they garnered over the years much greater returns. They have a staff of 25 to 30. Mansco Perry expert in investing says that his personal investments in this article don't match what the Minnesota State Board of Investment has been able to get. They have over $130 billion under their control, and that's what we would use at the city of Robbinsdale to garner these greater returns for residents. And this should, in my opinion, be a bipartisan bill. And I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Blonigan. And we all have great respect for Mr. Perry and for his predecessor, Mr. Bicker, who have done a great job with our State Board of Investment and making sure our state pension funds are properly invested so we can pay out to our retirees. Representative Quam, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the author clarify that cities would only be able to utilize the State Board of Investment for any investments, or would they have flexibility to go outside that?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. Under the terms of the existing law, it says that qualified governments may invest the amount described in either an index mutual funds based in the United States and indexed to a broad market United States equity index, or two with the Board of Investment. So index mutual funds is one option. The Board of Investment is another. As Mayor Blonigan testified, he is planning to use the Board of Investment option.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While the testifier makes a good case for their plans, since there isn't a constraint, and since smaller cities, dabbling, that's where I have my concern, is if we open up an avenue that is a little more concrete, trusting, etc., it'd be easier to take this step during these extremely volatile times in the investment area. And I'm not sure that an open-ended bill would be able to have the reassurances. With great intentions, people can make mistakes. And I just worry that when we open this up without some guardrails for entities that haven't been, I guess exposed to the downside as much. The testifier makes a good case about eyes wide open. They've done the research. But this bill would have effects across the state to many different cities. And, future people being elected to the council that have a dream and a vision. And I just worry that there's a downside risk. So to support this bill, I would really need to have those constraints to where they're utilizing known risk reduction by, going with our State Board of Investments and similar groups that have probably less downside risk. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Any further questions? I don't see any hands jumping up. Representative Freiberg, if you want to wrap up your bill.
Sure. I guess just to respond briefly to Representative Quam's points, I would not describe this as open-ended. There are limitations in place. Only 15% of certain reserves can be invested, and the provisions that I described are an existing law. I certainly wouldn't describe this as risk-free, but I don't see why small cities shouldn't be treated the same as large cities in terms of the options that are available to them. Large cities are, such as Minneapolis, or other cities that have AAA bond ratings, which are mostly larger, are able to do this. It is very difficult, as Mayor Blonigan testified, for smaller cities to achieve that AAA bond rating. AA is still very good. So I would encourage members to support this bill. I think it's a common sense change that treats cities equally while making sure that taxpayer funds are prudently taken care of.
And with that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 3176, as amended, be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks, will you take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
No.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Claiborne.
Claiborne, aye.
Claiborne votes aye. Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski votes aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Chair, with a vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the General Register. Members, that completes our agenda for today. Tomorrow is our next meeting. We start at 8:30. We've been given permission to go up till noon. There's some bills on the agenda. There was a couple bills added at the end of the agenda. If there are amendments that are needed, got till 4 o'clock and to get those in. We will be a little liberal on that or a little lenient on that because those are bills were added today. So members, with that, I'll see you tomorrow. This meeting is adjourned.